Dr. Veronica Benavides, and this is Talking to Grandma. In today's episode, I talk with Deandra Morse, the woman behind Bilingual Playdate, a social media account dedicated to celebrating and encouraging family bilingualism. Bilingual Playdate has been such a resource and inspiration to me, and I know for many others as well. Deandra and I talked not only about parenting and bilingualism, but also about the language of the heart and the mental load for parents raising bilingual children. I am excited for you to hear this conversation and the wisdom she has for other parents on this journey. Deandra is a licensed clinical social worker in New York State and the owner of Daring Hearts Counseling, a virtual private practice serving residents of New York State. Her clinical background includes experiences in school advocacy, sexual abuse prevention, healthy relationship building, and supporting bilingual families in Spanish. We are thrilled to kick off season one with this conversation with Deandra. Enjoy the episode. Welcome, Deandra.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, as you know, our podcast is called Talking to Grandma, and that's because so many immigrant and Indigenous children can't talk to their grandparents or elders if their heritage language is lost. And in the U.S., most heritage languages are lost by the third or second generation. So can you tell us a little bit about your experiences with language loss or language preservation or both?
Yes. So I grew up in the Dominican Republic and have a half sibling, and he grew up in Rhode Island in the United States. And so we were raised bilingually, like speaking both fluently. And we also went to school, which is a huge privilege and not easy accessible in the United States. But it was to us in the Dominican Republic. But my sibling didn't have those same opportunities, even though he lived in a predominantly Dominican neighborhood. His Spanish is more conversational and it was not supported in school. So now passing it down to my nephews is a far, far larger challenge than it is for me passing it down to my children, because I am a native speaker, but I also was raised with that academic support in that language. So it's just easier to do that when you have that additional support, but not impossible. And so that's kind of my indirect but direct experience with it. My sibling is navigating that, which is why I'm so inspired and I'm so committed to continuing to, you know, navigate bilingualism with other families and support them in their journey, so that even if growing up you were not able to hold on to that language because the community you were living in did not support you to be able to do that, or your school was not supportive of that, or your parents were given misguided advice, that you can still do it. It just is going to take additional work and in a larger commitment, but it's not impossible. And so that's kind of my experience with loss. And then with preservation, I started Bilingual Playdate in 2020 after the pandemic hit, and I was just transitioning to being a stay-at-home mom. My oldest, who's now three, at that point was 11 months old, but he had been predominantly cared for by English speakers, but he wasn't saying too many words, but he did have like words in English. And every time I heard them, I would be like, oh my God, how is this going to happen? He's not saying things in Spanish yet because he has not enough input. I was at work. And so Bilingual Playdate was my way to be intentional and to show up every day committed to teaching him Spanish. And then it turned into what it is now, which is more advocacy work, supporting the mental health of parents, and making sure that when we see misguided advice for parents, that we're kind of calling it out and saying, actually, this is what you need to be doing, or this is the resource that you need. So it's kind of, I don't know, I like tapping into my social worker self. I think social workers are always looking at the resources in the community and connecting people.
Sure. I mean, I totally get that sense when I look at your resources. I find it such an inspiration because I fall more on the side of your sibling's experience of not having the full repertoire of my heritage language, and definitely having parents that were misguided and who not only were misguided, but like experienced linguistic oppression and were led to believe that their culture and linguistic assets were not such. And so it was a process of reclaiming it. And then I kind of naively went forward and decided to raise my son in Spanish, not understanding how hard it would be Mm-hmm. And then I was kind of there in this process seeing like, it's possible, it's really hard. And here are some like guiding mindsets and tools that are necessary. Mm-hmm. And I always found bilingual playdate an incredibly useful resource because it's really necessary to shift mindsets in order to do the work of bilingual parenting, to understand that what you pass on is enough and that you mm-hmm. are enough. Because oftentimes, if you grow up speaking Spanish or some level of Spanish or any heritage language, you might have this sense of not enoughness in yes. you, or even in parenting, a sense of not enoughness.
Yes, absolutely. And that's what really, so in my work, in my private practice work, that is a lot of the things that my clients are coming in and they're talking about not feeling good enough, not feeling like they are deserving of passing down language or even passing down, maybe not even language, but like a traditional family value. There is a lot of insecurity coming into parenting in general, because who knows what we're doing? Like, no one knows what we're doing. We're just kind of figuring it out. And right. so when we think about passing down language and your culture and your heritage, we don't know, you know. And also we have to think about ourselves as we're bilingual and we're also bicultural, because we're not the same as if a child being raised in the Dominican Republic. My children are not going to be the same, you know. They are Dominican American, and they're going to have a lot of things from their Dominican roots, but it's not going to be the same as the ones in the DR, like my friend's kids. But they are good enough. And I think a lot of time it is a mindset. It is a persevering kind of mindset that we need to really adopt to be able to raise bilingual kids with our whole heart, because that's what it takes. It really takes commitment. And I think about it, parents in the US really love sports. They love football. They love a lot of sport-oriented activities. And I know a lot of families will make sacrifices, like, you know, practices every day after school. They'll do practices over the weekend. They'll skip holiday events. Like, they'll travel 3 states away for a game. Like, they'll do a lot of different things for the pursuit of a sport, mm-hmm. for their child to have a chance at a scholarship. And I think about bilingualism as the sport that my family has chosen. And for that sport to be able to thrive and my children to be able to really give it their all, then we have to practice, then we have to make sacrifices, then we have to be intentional about the amount of input that's coming in each language. And we have to constantly be thinking about it, just like I would be thinking about it if they were playing lacrosse or soccer. I would have to think about, you know, what do they need for practice? Do they need new gym shorts? Do they need new cleats? Do they need new sticks? Like, I would be thinking about that actively. And so that's kind of how I translated that into bilingualism, and how I explained it to my husband, who loves lacrosse.
I love that. Yeah, I think that's a great analogy and way to think about it. It's that, you know, it's a skill that needs mm-hmm. to be developed. And like any skill, you need guidance and a coach, mm-hmm. right? And so some of us are fortunate enough to have that coach in a schooling setting. Maybe mm-hmm. you send your child to a setting where there is that immersive experience. But some of us don't have that. Yep. And then it's like, what does it look like? You're not mm-hmm. sending them to a team practice where there is a coach doing this. How can you start to do some of that on your own and create that intentionality behind it? And definitely the resources that you provide also on like the different methods and ways that you can go about it. There's mm-hmm. not just one way to go right. about multilingualism and developing, you know, multicultural households as well, because those two things are so intertwined.
Yes, absolutely. And I think the best advice I can give anyone is that to focus on the thing that you like and your child likes and what makes you guys come together, and add language to that, because you already have that foundation. You already have the buy-in of they're already interested in that and they're going to like it. If your child likes dinosaurs, buy books in Spanish and dinosaur or whatever your target language is, so that you can also create a new relationship with the language. Because one of the things that happens, the longer we live in the United States, the further removed we are from our roots. And the more aligned we start to become with being in the United States, which is great, because a lot of us are also like, I am Dominican American, just like my children. But one of the things that we need to work at is like, okay, so since I live here, how do I then establish those roots? How do I also work on my own fluency and my own language, because there is this idea of like, my child just has to work on it and my child is going to pick up the language and then it's going to be done. And it's like, if you don't continue your own skills, then your child and you will fall back to English, because it is the dominant language for us as well in many areas of our lives. We'll never be two monolingual people. We're going to be bilingual, which means we're intertwined, and we're constantly dancing with our languages, basically. And so we're just choosing which language is going to be dancing to what song, the more we raise bilingual children.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think it's really interesting to have kind of our two perspectives as heritage speakers, but you having a more dominant kind of formative experience in your heritage mm-hmm. language and me having not as strong of a connection, and hearing that both of us still work on our heritage mm-hmm. language. Like, I still have to do it, which might be more expected, but you still have to do it as well yes. in order to like amplify that vocabulary, to be able to broach new conversations. Some of the things that maybe we've had experiences in one language and talking about one topic, but we haven't had that experience in another language talking about another topic. So I find myself like trying, I work in English, my, you know, partner, we mm-hmm. speak English. So I try to read all of my news in Spanish. I actually yes. pay attention if my son is listening to a podcast in Spanish, you know, I'm noting new words. And I think that that's really important to have that learner's mindset. You also mm-hmm. model it with your kid. Like with my son, I tell him, like, you know, we speak in Spanish, but it's not my first language. So yes. my English is better than my Spanish. And he knows that. So sometimes we have to look up words together, or yes. sometimes like I get corrected by a native Spanish speaker and he sees that, and he sees that you don't have to speak the language perfectly in order to speak it. And he's a fearless speaker of three languages. And mm-hmm. I think that is just something that I had to overcome as an adult that I'm mm-hmm. trying to model for him as a child, to understand that there's no gatekeeping with language and that he should feel the ability to use any of them at any level that he has it.
Yes, I love that. I love that so much. If I could reach every parent in every part of the world, what I would say is, like, from a mental health standpoint and from a therapy standpoint, modeling for children that we are not the end all be all, that we adults don't know everything and that we're also figuring it out, is so helpful. It helps them with not thinking that they have to be perfect, with not thinking that things are perfect, that it's okay to make mistakes, that it's okay to ask questions and look things up. Like, we don't know everything and everything of anything that we're even experts in. We're constantly learning. Bilingualism is the same thing. And I absolutely have to work at it. And I think bilingual play day, that was kind of what continued to inspire me, because I was used to working with small children. My smallest client was like a 3-year-old, and I was used to speaking in English and doing like kid play in English. And so play looked very different growing up, because I was in a Spanish speaking country. So even if my parents weren't like playing or reading to me every day, I was getting so much input thrown at me constantly. So my Spanish was never at risk, versus with my kids, play in Spanish is only possible through me or my husband. And so to me, play is at the heart of bilingualism. And so if we tap into play, we really can raise bilingual kids. And that's kind of what I always remind myself. And that's how I shift my mindset. Like, if I just focus on play, if I just focus on one thing, I am going to raise a bilingual child. If I just focus on learning more about this one thing, I will raise a bilingual child. And it slowly, you just start having more things that you are focusing and now are on your list.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that like focus and consistency is a really key part mm-hmm. of bilingual parenting. It's really hard too, because it's a fine line between consistency and flexibility, right?
Yes.
So you want to be consistent to ensure that you're creating like routines and structures that your kids can count on. And mm-hmm. even through difficult times, still having that there, but also being attentive to like, if this isn't working for my kid, then I need to switch the situation, which can be really hard for a lot of parents that are looking for bilingualism, because they're like, I want the formula to implement and then I want to see it work. Mm-hmm. But understanding that what works for one child, even in your family, mm-hmm. may not work for the second or the third or the fourth. And so it's always like, I love how you mentioned that bilingualism is like a dance between languages. It's also a dance between consistency and flexibility and being able to show up and also be responsive.
Yes, absolutely. And I think with anything in life, like we just go through different seasons and different things are thriving or not thriving, where different things feel easy and different things feel hard. Like through the pandemic, even though we were isolated from family, like a lot of people were, our Spanish thrived in my home because there wasn't anything else coming in. But now my three-year-old is starting preschool this fall. And so he'll be immersed in English and he'll be bringing that into our home, which we've never had to navigate before. And so that season will look very different than when we weren't having that exposure, when we weren't seeing people, when we weren't in the community as frequently. And I think that there is a level of flexibility, and there also, we need to give ourselves grace. And I think that that's what I love about talking about bilingual parenting mental load and how it's a lot of pressure to want to raise bilingual children and go against the grain, where our society really is a monolingual society or a monolingual loving society, or speak English first and then learn another language society. And so it's a lot of pressure, and it starts to wear on you if you don't want to acknowledge it, seek out support, connect with someone that gets it. We don't do ourselves any favors when we kind of keep that locked in and pretend that it's easy, or try to convince ourselves that it's easy, because what that does is that eventually it wears on our ability to continue on, because who can sustainably do something when it's starting to feel so, so hard on their mental health? At the end of the day, healthy kids require healthy parents, and healthy parents have to care for their mental health. And when something you're doing isn't helping your mental health, then it's not necessarily give up on bilingualism. No, it's reach out, connect with us, connect so that we can figure out if it's a mindset shift, if it's maybe you are given misguided advice, or you're looking at someone's experiences. And like you said, not every family is the same. Not every family has the same sources. Like me and you, both heritage speakers, but have a different background. And so we really do need to give ourselves some grace and find a way to weed through all that stuff that we're telling ourselves. My favorite social worker is Brené Brown. And she always says like that we sometimes get into a storm. And that's kind of what I think about. Like sometimes all these thoughts are coming in and we're thinking about it. And it's like, okay, let's breathe and let's figure it out, because we can always figure it out. It's not easy, but it's not impossible either.
Yeah. Yeah. I also love Brené Brown, and I think her work relates to bilingual parenting in so many ways.
In so many ways.
In terms of like taking a breath, recognizing the storm that's going on, but also leaning into vulnerability mm-hmm. and recognizing, you know, some of what can get rid of the shame that we have around our bilingualism or around our parenting is to say it out loud and to share it with others and to bring it to light. And so mm-hmm. I think it's really important what you're saying about like reaching out and being in community is going to be a critical part of the bilingual parenting journey, because otherwise we can just fall under this pressure of how hard it is if we're trying to do it all alone.
Right. And we think we're alone too. We think like, oh, it's just me. It's just me. Look at this person. They're doing it fine. It's just me who feels this way. And that was a very eye-opening experience for me. So at first with Bilingual Playdate, I was constantly just sharing like play ideas and inspiration and just trying to encourage people to like replicate them at home and use my cheat sheets. So like words in Spanish that they can use at home that are easily accessible. But then there was a shift when I started noticing that people were very thankful and happy to see them, because they were thinking they were the only ones that needed to practice or didn't know something. And I started doing like, como se dice? And then they started noticing that other people either didn't know how to say those things or were learning as well. And then that's when I really was like, there's so much vulnerability in raising bilingual kids. And we're not talking about it. We're not tapping into it. And we're not recognizing that it just makes us human. Like, it's part of who we are. And that's what our kids need to see to be healthy human beings. They need to see us be vulnerable. They need to see us as learners. They need to see us in partnership and in community with other people. And that is how we preserve our heritage too. We don't just do it alone. We don't just speak the language in our home and don't let anybody else see us speaking. We go out and we embrace it. And when bad things happen, when someone is racist and discriminatory towards us, then we have those hard conversations with our child. And we talk about, what's going on for them, for our child, and what's going on maybe for that person, and how that is not a reflection of our child and whether they're good enough or not. And that's the work that I think as bilingual parents, sometimes we struggle to do because we don't know that we can do it. And sometimes it's just needing that permission or that validation. And I'm so happy to be able to every day hopefully connect with a family where I'm giving their validation and encouragement that they need to do this hard work, because it definitely is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you're naming something really important there, that a big deterrent to bilingualism for many years has been the discrimination, has been mm-hmm. the fear of like limiting opportunities because we don't see it as a gift. We don't mm-hmm. see it as something that is worthy. And so those are like the generational mindset shifts mm-hmm. that we need to start to work on, and unfortunately still exist in places. Yeah. Some people will look at you and think that you should be speaking English with your child mm-hmm. or that your child should be speaking English, and not shying away from still choosing the bilingual mm-hmm. journey in spite of that.
Yeah. And I think honestly, it's a scary conversation to have with your kid, but it's also a real conversation. I think that sometimes when we shy away from talking about it with our kids, and it doesn't have to be talked about when it happens, we can do the work to age appropriately, have those conversations prior to that happening so that our kids know that that could happen. Because one of the things that also happens is some kids don't know that not everyone is bilingual, or that not everyone is going to see it as a superpower like we see it. And then they are shamed, or they are picked at, or they're bullied in school or at the playground. And that starts causing them to push back on the language, because kids want to fit in. They don't want to stand out. That's typical and developmentally appropriate. But we have to prepare them for that, because it could be their language, but it could also be their color of their skin or the way that their hair looks or the clothes that they're wearing. They're going to experience rejection at some point in their life, or they're going to be poked at for something that makes them different than someone else, and not preparing them for that experience isn't helpful to them. It actually puts them in more danger. I mean, I've talked to my three-year-old already that not everyone is bilingual. Not everyone thinks it's a gift. Not everyone thinks it's a superpower, but that's them. Like, they don't know that it actually is. And so I just hope that I can continue to inspire other families to have those conversations with their children and in their communities, so that we can push back on those kinds of discrimination practices that do keep us from doing what feels right and what feels like we need to be doing for our children.
Yeah. Yes. Amen. I think that's so true. And I think, you know, preparing them for those realities are really going to give them the ground, like this sound foundation that they need in order to navigate the world. Mm-hmm. And also, I think preparing them with mindsets to be able to kind of navigate that. So as you mentioned, mm-hmm. like bilingualism is a superpower, even repeating that regularly helps create mm-hmm. that mindset for them that yeah. we may think it's a small thing, like, oh, we don't have to say it. It's like, mm-hmm. it's known or it's assumed, but actually saying it out loud and repeating mm-hmm. it and giving those affirmations to your child, and your child saying it, helps it become a part of their identity so that they are more resilient when they go out into the world and they experience some type of discrimination on that, you know, identity or some other identity, if it is your skin color, if it is, you know, your race or your culture, helping them to know like being Black is beautiful, having curly hair is gorgeous. We love going to Mexico, like whatever it is that is a part of your child's identity, having them kind of ground themselves in a positive sense of self is really important to being able to have that self-love and also love for others who are different, who come from different walks of life.
Right, right. Yesterday, actually, I told my 3-year-old, we had family over and they were speaking English. And he said, "Mom, but you're speaking English to them." And I was like, "Yes, because bilingualism is our superpower. And I share it with you every day." And he was just like, "Oh, we are superheroes." And yeah. I'm like, "Yes, we are." And it was just so cute. Like, I was so cute that he was just like, got it. He was like, yeah. And then the whole time he would speak to them in English and he would speak to me in Spanish, unwavering, because he knew like me and you share this together. This is our thing. And it's part of our relationship. And I think that we need that mindset for our kids. We need that self-love. We need that pride to be able to confidently walk through any environment, knowing that their bilingualism can exist no matter where they go, and it doesn't have to be put away. It doesn't have to be something that they're not proud to tell people about. And if someone says something negatively about it, then we can also have that conversation. There are options. And I think sometimes kids don't even know when other kids are being mean or when something is being said. They can feel it, but they can't put words to it. And so, the more we create that awareness, I feel that more confidence will come into those situations when they have to respond, or maybe they don't have to respond. That's an option too. You know, they can hear it and, you know, in one ear, out the other. There's so many things that we can, you know, give them when it comes to bilingualism.
Yes, yes. And I think it's really important what you mentioned in terms of your relationship with your child being a part of your bilingualism. Like the bilingualism is a part of your relationship. And it brings me back to what you mentioned about play and really focusing on play as a tool for bilingualism. And I've always really focused on that as well, of like, I want my children to have a positive relationship with the language, because they know if they have a positive relationship with the language, then it's going to be sustained in a more meaningful way rather than like a task or a subject that they have to study. And I've always kind of, before going through the mindset shifts, felt a little bit self-conscious about it, because there's so many researchers and scholars out there that say like, you should raise your child in your first language and you should not raise your child in a second language, which I think has good intentions, maybe is targeted towards immigrant families that are coming to another country with, you know, English dominant settings, trying to preserve that heritage language. But I think it doesn't consider the heritage languages and the dance that you talked about, where we may have like multiple languages in our repertoire with varying levels of fluency. So for me, I was like, is this wrong that I'm going to be raising my child in Spanish, even though it's not my first or dominant language? Am I going to be able to build a relationship with him that's as meaningful as a relationship in English? And I have, and it's beautiful and amazing. And Spanish is not my first language, but it is my love language. It's my language with my children. And I saw you put out a post the other day about like Mythbusters around this. And this is one of the things that I really love about your work, is that you are putting Mythbusters out there of things that we've been told that actually aren't true, that don't play out in real life. And we can see with outliers, not only with my experience, but also the experience of like many, many Indigenous peoples that are reclaiming their language, that are reclaiming what was taken from them. And it is the language of the heart, even if not the first language.
Right. Yes, like Spanish is my love language. And I always say that too. But even like my husband is white, monolingual male. He has adopted Spanish as his love language for his children. And he had only high school and college knowledge, basic things. And he has been able to fully connect with our children in Spanish because love makes anything possible. And children don't need someone who has a master's in Spanish or in any language for them to feel seen, connected, loved, respected. That's what they need. That's like the little formula of like parenting. They need to be all those four things, and they need to feel like the adult that's showing up for them in whatever language it is, in whatever dominance, can make them feel those things. And for me, I really dislike when people say that you should only speak to children in your most confident, most dominant language, because it does take away from the realities of bilingualism, that we're not two monolingual people, that we have varying dominance. And it takes away from the idea that even if someone isn't dominant in something, they can still learn. And so it almost takes away that learning opportunity by saying, no, only if you are the best in this, if your English is perfect, if your Spanish is perfect. And then it starts introducing that idea and pressure of perfectionism that, honestly, even if you're monolingual, no one speaks a language perfectly. Like, I know for a fact that I've heard English speakers say things, whether mispronounced or spell them wrong. Like, it's a human error. It's something that makes us human to not know everything perfectly. I think that is such discouraging advice, and it makes me want to show up at Bilingual Plated every day so I can fight that. It's so shaming, and it is so guilt producing. And I just, my little heart just breaks for families that are hearing that and they don't have a counter argument or a counter person that they can have that conversation with.
Yeah. I think it's so important to, like you said, show up every day, counter that. That's a part of why we have the Language Preservation Project and also the podcast, because when I started my multilingual parenting journey, even people, you know, within my own community and family were like, I don't think you should be doing this, or are you sure you should be doing this? And when it comes from people you love, you know, came from people who decided not to do that, who decided right. for them that wasn't the right path. But also it can make you doubt yourself a lot if you don't see examples of other people doing it and other ways of doing it. And I think what's really important is to see, like, what feels most true and authentic to you as a parent. Like, what do you want to leave your child behind with? And I wanted my child and children to feel connected to their language and to their culture. And so that, you know, was a part of my parenting journey. And I think also really understanding that, like, what you give is only the part that you can control. You can't control the outcome of what they take. That's also a part of parenting, of being able to release the outcome part of it and really understand that you can only control the input part of it.
Absolutely. And nothing I do right now can guarantee me or anyone that my children are going to be bilingualism lovers. But I can put down that foundation and hope that it does end up being the way that it's meant to be. And in hope that they feel pride. I can only hope they're the ones that when they're older, get to decide what they're going to do. We just can confidently put our first foot forward and hope that what we're doing is good enough and feel good about what we're doing. And our kids will see that whatever the outcome is, my mom always put her first foot forward. She always tried her best. And that's all I think any parent needs to be doing, whether on a bilingual parenting journey or not, just the best that you can.
You mentioned a bit about your partner and his support in the creation of a bilingual family. Oftentimes, bilingual parenting in a mixed culture couple or mixed language household, it can fall on the heritage Spanish speaker to be the holder of bilingualism. So can you share a little bit about your experiences with that as being the heritage Spanish speaker, but also having your partner involved in the creation of a bilingual environment for your children?
Yes. When we, I mean, my husband always knew that I spoke Spanish and my family predominantly speaks Spanish. My parents don't speak English. And so we always knew in our head that we were going to raise bilingual kids. But when you're in love and you talk about those things, you don't really understand the nitty gritty and like how this is actually going to play out. So then I actually live in the town that he grew up in. And there are not many Spanish resources in our area. And so when we had our first son, we had no idea that it didn't just happen. And we didn't have, I mean, for a short period of time, we didn't have any idea. And then my therapist brain woke up from my postpartum and was like, wait, language is passed down by consistency. Like I knew. And so it started clicking for me how my own bilingualism happened and how the environment that we had set up wasn't necessarily going to lead there. And so one of the things that I think had sets our family apart or set us apart in that season of life was that I was very clear that raising a bilingual child was a non-negotiable for me and that it was my love language and I needed that to feel connected to my child. And that I needed to be able to introduce and have more Spanish as a part of our home environment. And my husband saw how important that was for me, just like it was very important for him for us to not raise children in New York City. He really wanted them to be raised more in the country, more with land and open space and not in a city. And so we were able to have that conversation about what is important for each of us when it comes to our child, and with the understanding that he was going to go to school in English because there's not a dual immersion program here. And so with the understanding that even that we can prioritize a language right now in school and the environment and his family around us would help with English. And that's how bilingualism was going to happen. And so for us, it was really sitting down and having that conversation. And I don't know that many parents have that like conversation so directly. And oftentimes that's step one, like sitting down with your partner and like, let's talk about it. Let's talk about what your bilingual parenting goals are and what my bilingual parenting goals are. And are they aligned? And if they're not aligned, like, what are we doing? And how can, no matter what we're doing, you be my partner in this? Because this is a team effort. This cannot just fall on me. Even if I'm the heritage speaker and the one that can provide most of the input, our kids will still benefit from seeing your interactions with me and your interactions with them. So for my husband, what was sustainable for him in the beginning was to read books at bedtime. And so he started reading kid books and his slowly, now we're 3 years plus in, his vocabulary just started coming back and growing because he was reading three books every day. Like three books at night every day. And then eventually he was learning these words and then using them in the day to day. And we all know kids love a book and they get obsessed with it and they just like want to read it over and over again. So then it became like he was memorizing the book because he was. And so slowly we started incorporating more of the language and then it's become our family language to the point that even, I mean, my husband's family is very supportive. We also had a very direct conversation with them as well. If they were watching the kids, we have said, you know, if they're going to watch TV, we'd rather it be in Spanish if they're going to. And so we had guidelines and things that were important to us, just like if someone was having their kid being babysat and they were like, we don't want them to have candy. We don't want them to watch TV. You know, we have the similar things, but they have to do with language. And our in-laws have been very supportive. They have learned many words also, and they incorporate them. So it was like a very direct conversation and a very direct plan. It was a very vulnerable moment for me to be able to say, like, I know that I didn't think this through, that, you know, maybe leaving New York City where I had so much resources and so much input and coming upstate New York wasn't the best choice for raising a bilingual child, but I want to do it here, but this is what it's going to take. So it's a give and take, I think, in any family and in any parenting dynamic, but especially in a bilingual parenting dynamic.
Yes. Yes. And I love that it's a joint effort, like bilingual mm-hmm. parenting. It's not just on one parent. Mm-hmm. And in our family, we have English, Spanish, and Danish. So I speak to our children just in Spanish, and my husband speaks to them just in Danish. And then we share English, and we speak English using like time and place, for instance, at yep. dinner time. And it requires so many conversations, especially at the beginning. So I think it was great that your husband had some like foundational Spanish, but I did not understand any Danish, and my husband did not understand any Spanish. So starting really early on was helpful for us, because, you know, when you're speaking it consistently at like a, you know, toddler, one-year-old mm-hmm. level, you can access it really easily. So yeah. not knowing the language isn't really an excuse not to have it spoken in your household, because as you mentioned, you can learn a lot along the way, even if you don't know anything. So your husband learned a lot, your in-laws are learning a lot. Mm-hmm. It really kind of is a great time to learn alongside children mm-hmm. if you have the ability to kind of infuse that language in your household. And so I don't speak Danish very well, but I have a pretty good understanding of mm-hmm. a conversation of a, you know, four-year-old right. level. Yeah.
I was thinking about it, how important it is to have those conversations with our family members. So one of the things that I have been very transparent and vulnerable with my mother-in-law, I have bilingual play day. I do the mental load of bilingual parents and the invisible mental load. And I have shown her like this is what I've posted. These are all the ones I feel. And it was like it took our relationship to the next level, because she was like, I had no idea that you felt that way. I had no idea that parents feel this way. How can I support you? How can we navigate that? How can we like work together so that you don't feel so alone in this process, even if we don't speak the language fluently? And I think that the more we're having those conversations, the more united we can be. And I talk about that. I'm like, well, one of the things that is hard is that, you know, when we come over, I want to continue to speak Spanish. I don't want to switch to English with my kids. And so I hope that that doesn't make you feel uncomfortable. And I hope that that doesn't make you feel like we're talking about you. If you're ever curious about what we're saying, please ask and I will let you know. But a lot of the times, the things that my toddler is saying is not stuff that you want to know anyway. It's like, I want to go to the bathroom, or I'm hungry, or my belly hurts, or, you know, we're not having meaningful, deep conversations in front of family, or trying to leave family out of our conversations. We're connecting, but it has nothing to do with anybody else but us. And I think, I guess that's the biggest part about bilingual parenting mental health, is that we are going to have to set boundaries in our relationship, and we might have to have these really hard conversations to defend and protect our heritage language.
Wow, Deandra, I could speak to you all day.
Oh my God, me too.
Heritage language preservation, parenting, mental health. Thank you so much for all the work that you do, for showing up today on the podcast. I know your story and all the resources that you share are helping so many families stay connected to their roots, to their heritage, to their culture and where they came from, and raise amazing bilingual, multilingual children who have superpowers. So thank you so much. As we close out the podcast, do you just want to share with us something that's bringing you joy right now in your bilingual parenting journey?
Yes, absolutely. So one of the things that's bringing me joy is I have a 3-year-old and I have a 20-month-old, and I'm seeing my 3-year-old not only understand what my 20-month-old is saying, like he's starting to put sentences together, but also engage him and see their relationship being established in Spanish. And it just warms my heart to see them communicate with each other in the language, to see my love language be passed down with more love. And so that's what's bringing me so much joy.
Oh, that's beautiful. Bringing me a lot of joy too. My heart is melting right now. Thank you so much sharing that with us.
Thank you for listening. Talking to Grandma is owned by the Language Preservation Project and sponsored by Onward. Rebecca De Leon is our editor and producer. The artwork for Talking to Grandma was created by Nancy Guevara, and I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides. We love hearing from you. email us at hello@thelanguageproject.co, slide into our DMs on Instagram at @talkingtograndma, and remember, please subscribe or follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you are listening right now. Help us grow our community and reach more families and educators by sharing this podcast or leaving a review. See you next episode.